Mr. Brown, Reel 2. You mentioned that you graduated on flying boats. Can you tell me about those?
Yes, we were told that White Wartham was going to be a flying boat base because it was central and very convenient, and they wanted flight engineers, particularly those who had some experience of sailing. And so I immediately applied and was accepted, and our training started at Allness in Cromarty in Scotland, just north of Inverness. And there were two or three pilots, I think, and two or three engineers. And we did our practical training. There was no, I don't remember that there was any technical training at all. It was simply straight onto the flying boat and flying. And we started off on the Catalina. And I remember this particular Catalina we were allocated had the most appalling petrol leaks, and it was quite dangerous because the engineer sat up in a section under the wing and operated from there, and the pilots, of course, were up at front. And to retract the floats, this was done electrically, and the motor was in the middle, and this thing was sparking away and had petrol running down it, you know. And we were also suffering from the fumes, and eventually the RAF decided that perhaps they ought to take it out of service. But we continued this flying, and the Catalina was interesting because it was a very flat-bottomed boat, and if you had a rough sea, you couldn't land it in a normal, gentle way. You had to stall it from about 20 feet up. So when you had a rough day, you would practice this, and you'd get the thing into the fully stall position about 20 feet above the waves, the tail right down, and then suddenly it would just flop into the sea and stop dead. And the engineer then had to get out of his seat and go around and make sure he hadn't burst any rivets or anything like that. After we completed that, we then had a session on the Sunderland, which was a much bigger boat, and I didn't suffer from this problem in rough weather. And I think it did about 30 or 40 hours flying. And then back to base and out to the first ferry.
What did you think of flying in the flying boats?
Oh, it was great fun. Yes, it was great fun. It could be extremely cold and wet and so on because there were no heating in the darn things. You could get very wet, or the flight engineer could get very wet, both before and after, if it was rough.
What was it like, this landing of the Catalina? Was it not painful?
Painful. Only painful to the engineer's ears when you heard the panting noise of it crash as it hit the water. No, it wasn't painful. It was quite peculiar because no aeroplane is normally landed in that way. You literally stopped dead. You hit the water and stopped instantly. But if you didn't do that, you'd hit the top of a wave and it would throw the thing up, and then you'd end up with a very great heart and stall in, I expect. So it was the only way to do it on rough water.
What were your duties apart from running out afterwards?
Well, we had people, sea cadets were used actually, to operate the drogues, which are the things to slow the boat down. It was sort of like a canvas bucket on the end of a rope, which was streamed either left or the right side or both, and a so-called trip rope, which was supposed to empty the bucket and you could bring it in, but it never worked. And they used to help with the mooring. So you had a crew of about three cadets. And my duties have been normal flight engineers, to operating the panels, to checking the aircraft before takeoff, that all the panels were closed and everything was serviceable. This was something that engineers always did anyway. You went around the aeroplane to make sure that everything was serviceable and nothing falling off, and all the hatches were closed and all that sort of thing.
How did these boat planes take off?
Much the same way as a land plane. The only thing was you circled around, you couldn't stop. You had to have room to be able to turn and line up for takeoff or get out of the way of other things. So once you'd started your engines, you were on the move all the time. But with the throttles closed, they would move fairly slowly, about 12, 15 knots maybe.
And what were they like once they were in the air?
Same as any other aeroplane, really. It was quite an interesting experience taking off. The old aeroplane would move forward slowly to start, and then it would come up on the step and start to accelerate away nicely and then just lift off. That was pleasant.
Who were the pilots who were trained?
They were mainly the four-engined pilots who'd been on the four-engine aircraft. So that they were very experienced.
Did they have any particular problems with flying these pilots?
It was just the technique of turning, because if you went to somewhere like Rochester, where we picked up the flying boats, the river was fairly narrow. You had a road bridge one end, which could be an embarrassment, and you had a turn in the river, a fairly sharp, 45-degree bend in the river, so you were a bit restricted. You either took off up the river from the factory or from the bridge towards the factory, depending on the wind direction. But the thing was that you had to get right close into the bank on one side and then use full power on your engine on one side to turn round. And I remember on one occasion that we just started up, it was very cold and the engines weren't really warmed up properly, and we had to cast off fairly quickly, of course. And the pilot came up to the bank on the port side to turn, and as he opened the two engines on the port side, because they weren't really warmed up, they both coughed and stopped. And the starboard engines, of course, then dragged his nose first into the bank. As the tide was dropping, they had to be very quick to get the launch out to heave us off. But that was a sort of difficult thing that happened.
How necessary was it to have had sailing experience?
Well, not really. It was just that you were used to mooring up and being on the water, and that was really all. It was a way of sending people out, I reckon.
Once you'd qualified, how frequently did you find you were flying boats?
It's difficult to say without looking at the log. Probably about once a week. Quite a lot, yes. Yes, on average.
Can you tell me generally, what were the chief hazards that you had to face as a flight engineer?
Well, I think all of us, it was the fact that we had to fly no more than 1,000 feet above the ground. We had no radio communication whatever, because we weren't allowed to, as it might give the position away to enemy aircraft. So I would think both pilots and engineers, the weather was the biggest problem. And you could be caught out by weather coming in without you knowing, actually.
Who would decide upon the weather conditions, you or the pilot?
Oh, the pilot. But each pool had a Met Office run by the RAF, WAFs usually. But weather forecasting wasn't of, it was pretty good guesstimating, because there were no really reliable means of forecasting the weather that was coming in. They had the weather ships out in the Atlantic, but it was a great deal was the skill of the weather forecaster on the station. And of course it could make mistakes. So sometimes you get a front come in, well, like today, which could catch you out because it hadn't been predicted properly. So, yeah, the biggest danger was the weather.
Did you ever have occasion to think your pilot had made the wrong judgment about the weather?
Well, if it did, I mean, you didn't think anything of it. I mean, it was one of those things. You knew perfectly well that it could happen. You could get the case where some pirates might be considered too press-on types, you know, pressing on too much. One was encouraged to press on if he could. You weren't expected to dilly-dally if there's any chance of going through, but on the other hand, you weren't expected to wreck your aeroplane yourself. So, judgment.
Did you fly with pilots of other nationalities?
Oh, yes, plenty of them. Polish, Czechs, all sorts. Yes, Double Whiskey was one. Polish pilot, I believe he was chief pilot of the Polish airline before the war. Great bloke. Americans, plenty of Americans. They were all good.
Were there any special problems associated with flying with a foreign pilot?
No. They all had the same basic training with the ATA, and the systems were all known to each other, and we worked to fairly simple rules, and it seemed to work very well.
What about language?
No great problem, no. They all spoke English, they had, didn't they? You know, it was a bit clipped and broken, some of it.
What about rules and regulations within ATA?
They were fairly, they were straightforward, simple, common sense, and easily followed. ATA really was based on the old BOAC system, I think, which in those days fairly straightforward anyway. The pilot certainly had a great deal of, he was given the decisions, allowed to make the decisions, rather than these days where everything's buttoned up and he's left the machine. But they worked.
What about off-duty behaviour? Were there any rules regarding that?
Well, you weren't expected to be seen drinking too much in uniform, I suppose, but of course people did. Yeah, I suppose they did in those days. You were in uniform. You were off-duty. No, I don't think there were too many regulations, any more than there were for the RAF or anyone else.
Did you ever hear of anybody flying an aeroplane to some place they shouldn't have flown to make a personal visit?
To make a personal visit? It probably happened, but to actually land, you mean? No. I can't remember.
And what about pilots' behaviour in the air? I mean, stunts, aerobatics, low flying.
Yes. There was a certain pilot I was with one day who owned farms in Norfolk, and they used to have Italian prisoners of war working there, and he used to sort of shoot up the place, and the poor old ISIs used to lie flat in the faces or backs or something to avoid these aircraft. And one day I was with him, and in a Lancaster, and we shot down over the field fairly low, and these so-and-sos wouldn't lie down, and he realised that they were Germans and they were just loading up their erect. Yes.
Are there any official repercussions?
No. That sort of thing wasn't frowned upon too much, as long as you didn't bend anything. It was sort of general attitude in those days anyway. I don't think it was just the war. Things have so changed these days.
You stayed at Ratcliffe for the duration of the war?
Yes, from 1942 to November 1945. Yeah.
What happened when the war ended?
Well, we were all notified that you know, that things were finishing, and would we go to White Waltham and hand in our uniforms or whatever it was. I don't think it was uniforms we had to hand in, no. There were various documents we had to hand in, and various letters received and statements of account and all that sort of thing, and then a letter of thanks, and that was it. quite straightforward. That was the end of it.
I hadn't asked earlier, what had been your pay as a flight engineer?
As a flight engineer, I understand it was about the same as pilots of equivalent rank, because there was no differentiation. What do you want to know the actual amount?
No, I was interested in comparison with pilots.
From rank, I think it was the same. I was quite amazed when I read later, in Bessie Curtis' book, I think it was, that they only got the same sort of thing rank for rank. Wasn't very much.
What was your opinion of the pay?
It was good, compared with what I had been getting. Yes. I wasn't complaining. Mind you, when you think of the type of work it was it needed to be a bit more than it was here on the ground. Yes.
What did you? What was your reaction to having to leave ATA?
I forgot to mention, of course, that I had actually applied to join BOAC as a flight engineer, as we were given the opportunity. It had been a very, very pleasant experience in so many ways, meeting so many interesting people and doing interesting things. Anyway, I eventually did join BOAC as a trainee flight engineer.
Were you given priority because of your service in ATA?
We were given the opportunity of applying, yes. But then, of course, when I did eventually get accepted, I found there were probably far more ex-RAF people who were there as trainees. So the number of people who actually wanted to go on was fairly small, I think, because a lot of the flight engineers and a lot of the pilots, of course, were not really professional people as such, though, of course, I was, and other people like me.
Did you have to have further training with BOAC?
Well, then, of course, you got to the much more detailed training on type, because you were expected to take engineers' licences on the type. And therefore, you had an engine course which went on for about 6 weeks, and an airframe course that went on. Probably about the same time, and general things, with the purpose of getting a licence.
How different was it from the training and the work you'd been doing?
It was far more detailed and far more boring, and there was a terrible waste of time, whereas during the war you didn't waste time. The course for the engine, for instance, was at least 2 weeks longer than it needed to be. This sort of thing is a bit foreign, to say the least.
And what about your pay? How did that relate to your
That was quite amusing, actually. I think it was about 5 guineas a week, plus 1 guinea expenses, which was enough,
Was this pay lower than you'd been earning?
Yes, it was, but then, of course, we were trainees. I don't think the pay was going to be very high anyway, because I was still on pre-war rates, really. That's what it meant.
Did you stay with BOAC?
I stayed about 3 months and did two courses, the engine and the airframe, took my licences with them, extended my licences because I already had licences. And joined the West London Aero Club, which was going to start as soon as civil flying was allowed again, which I think was about Whitsun, 46.
And what were your duties there?
I was a licensed aircraft engineer on the ground on light aircraft, going back to my original thing. And that's what I've done ever since, really.
Why did you not want to remain a flight engineer?
It was obviously going to be very boring compared to what it had been during the war. You were going to be lengthy periods down the line. I think on the flying boats it was something like 6 weeks getting to Australia and back, because you kept on crews kept being slipped, you see, and the idea didn't sound very interesting to me.
So did this mean you stopped flying in the air?
I stopped flying as a flight engineer, but I decided I'd get my private pilot's licence, which I'd wanted to do much earlier, and in joining West London Aero Club, there was Joan Hughes and one or two others, and during lunchtime, or when the wind was too strong for the paying members, I was given instruction at half the rate, which was 30 shillings an hour, which sounds ridiculous these days. And I just kept my hand in that way, and did odd jobs, flying around picking up spares or other things like that.